From KCRW, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is Unfictional. Unfictional is a program of true stories, personal documentaries, and radio movies. And all this season, we've been featuring stories about perception and the way two people can see two completely different views of reality from the same set of facts. On this episode, a story of denial. When we're exposed to an experience that's just too far outside our understanding of the world, too upsetting to process correctly, let's say it's some information that someone close to you, someone you trust, has done something shocking and wrong, well, your brain might create a defense mechanism and just bypass, not deal with it, maybe just forget it ever happened. Meanwhile, from your perspective, the fact you didn't make a big deal of it makes you feel open-minded, generous, flexible, and loyal. That's denial. And almost everyone is in denial about something. And a warning that this episode does have some adult themes and language. This is the story of Janie Williams, who was sexually assaulted by a longtime member of her friend group. But when she talks to her friends about it, years later, and she tries to uncover the truth about what happened, her friends want to cover it right back up again. It's a story produced by Unfictional managing producer Carla Green. From KCRW, it's Unfictional.
Can you just, like, tell me what your friend group around high school and after high school was like?
It was incredibly close. We were just wacky together. We were constantly laughing and being creative together. We went to a creative high school.
And everyone was just like, oh, it's Janie's friend. Come on in. It was such a great feeling.
This is Nicole. She lived in Arizona, but the summer after high school, she came out to Hollywood to visit me and really hung out the whole time with me and my friends.
Granted, it was probably just because you had awesome friends at the time, yeah. So I just wanted...
We came from a not-so-affluent neighborhood, so we didn't have money to do lots of things, so we had to be really creative. Show up at Denny's and just have a raucous time for 3 hours. It was the rock and roll Denny's in Hollywood, so we were not the only ones. We kind of fit in there.
And then what I was used to, you know, there was no shit talking.
I introduced Veronica to my group of friends from high school after we met in college.
It was very communal, like a family, like a big family.
We would go to the beach late night when we weren't supposed to be there and just bring a guitar and sing and hang out. Being obnoxious teenagers, you know, I mean, the good stuff.
We're awesome friends.
I totally agree.
This is my friend Luce. We also met in high school.
How especially I love our hikes and being out in nature, and it just kind of shut everything out, you know, and everything that society says that we needed to do and do things in a certain way.
We really loved each other and we really enjoyed our time together. It was quite special.
So tell me about how you knew Matthew.
I met Matthew my senior year of high school. We just happened to sit down at a bench together after school. And Matthew was sharp, hilarious, and weird. He was just cracking jokes the whole time, and I was laughing hysterically for hours. Matthew became my very best friend. When I went away to college, Matthew kept in touch more than most, and our friendship deepened. I definitely felt love for him as well. It just wasn't romantic love.
So at what point did Matthew try to turn your friendship into a romantic relationship?
It happened after several years of this kind of back and forth. And junior year, Matthew informed me that we could no longer be friends. He finally said that if we didn't try dating, our relationship would be over completely. At the time, I couldn't bear the thought of losing him, so I gave it a shot. It was giving me an impossible choice. It didn't work out. You can't fake romantic love. Immediately after we broke up, Matthew started to act insane. He was just all over the place emotionally, and he would lash out at me in weird ways. And yet he wanted to be around me all the time. He would tell me things that really hurt me, like tell me that a friend of ours hated me secretly. He would pinch me.
He would lie down in the street with cars speeding towards him as I watched in horror.
And when he would do these things, would you be like, what the fuck, Matthew? Like, how would you react?
Yeah, exactly. I would say, what the fuck, Matthew? Exactly those words, yes. And then he also started to follow me and watch my house, and he let me know that he was doing so.
And he had, like, a shrine to you or something?
Yes, he also let me know that he had a shrine to me in his house. Made me feel unsafe, but it was also coming from someone who I knew was a tortured soul, and I made excuses.
One night, Matthew and I went with a couple friends to a bar.
It wasn't anything abnormal to go to the bar. We were always going to places together, even though he was acting weirdly towards me.
Matthew got me a drink, and as soon as I finished it, I felt sick.
And were you suspicious about the fact that you felt weird after one drink?
No. Not at the time, not at all. I didn't put it together at all. Because I still had such a deep trust of Matthew.
I ran to the bathroom and threw up violently. When I came out of the bathroom, I felt strange, woozy, and out of touch with my body.
It never occurred to me that he would put something in my drink, never in a million years, even after what came next.
Matthew took me back to his place, helped me lie down on the couch, and then he paced back and forth in the living room.
Then he said, hey, I think you should get some sleep in my bed. And he helped me get there, and I laid down.
He whispered, we will never be friends. We will never be friends. Over and over again, while sexually molesting me. He took off my clothes. His mouth, tongue, hands, and fingers were everywhere. I was squirming, trying to regain control of my body. I was saying, stop, no. We will never be friends, he repeated, and he kept on.
I kept hoping he'd stop. And then eventually, finally, my body cooperated and I was able to get up.
As I unlatched the chain lock on the door, Matthew said, no, wait, I'm sorry, don't go. I said, no, Matthew, that was really fucked up.
I unchained the door and ran to my car.
After the assault came denial, and it started with me.
I drove straight to my apartment, and my roommate was up.
My stomach was in knots, but I forced a smile.
So then you didn't tell anybody what had happened?
Right. I wanted what had just happened not to have happened.
Did your roommate know Matthew?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. And so telling him would have made it real. I would have had to deal with it, and I didn't. I wasn't ready.
The next evening, I went to a gathering at my neighbor's house.
Matthew showed up at this party, and
when we made eye contact, he smiled.
It was like the shock, the sign that he was not remorseful at all. And I ran over to him and said, Matthew, get out of here. What are you doing here?
His smile widened, and he said, no, you leave.
And that was just, it just made it even more clear.
I knew what he was saying. He had no remorse for what he'd done.
This was purposeful and vindictive.
He wasn't going to give me any space to be away from him.
He was pushing me out.
I left the party, and then I left the city. I moved to San Francisco, and then later to Colombia and Germany. I stayed away for years. You may be wondering why I left, why I didn't tell anyone right away.
first, I wasn't ready to let Matthew go myself. I still cared for him. And second, I didn't want him to lose his friends. I was protecting him on some level. And then third, I sensed that he wouldn't lose his friends. I knew deep down that my friends wouldn't want to take sides. And I was right.
Which I discovered when I moved back to LA 4 years later and decided to come out with the truth.
This is Unfictional from KCRW. And the story by Janie Williams continues in a moment.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
From KCRW, I'm Bob Carlson, and this story of Janie Williams continues. She decides to tell her friend group that she was assaulted by one of their common friends. This story is produced by Unfictional managing producer Carla Green. From KCRW, it's Unfictional.
How did you come to the decision to tell your friends?
I really sensed that it wouldn't be easy. It would be, the repercussions of telling would be complicated. I just knew that I had to tell now. I had to face this truth.
Now it was my friend's turn with denial.
Where were you when you, like, sat your friends down and told them what had happened?
Well, I remember with Veronica.
When I told them what Matthew had done, they didn't say much.
It was actually at her birthday party, which is not a good place to do it.
They kind of froze, like deer in headlights.
But she had asked me if I was going to be coming to this Hollywood Bowl event that they were doing, and I knew Matthew would be going, so I said, well, I can't go if Matthew's going. And then I had to tell her why.
And then we just didn't speak about it again. They continued to hang out with Matthew as if nothing had happened.
So your friends kind of didn't really react when you told them what Matthew had done, but he had this kind of pattern of behavior that they all knew about, right?
Absolutely. Everybody had seen Matthew at some point or another do some things that were really weird.
Like drunk, out of control, getting naked, you know, doing inappropriate things.
And they'd also seen him do things with other people, like sexual things.
Creepy things.
Really creepy things.
I think at Malia's, he had, like, was sitting on a table, pulled his pants down.
One of my friends was passed out on the couch, and he was sort of, like, hovering over her. And even though I didn't want to believe that he would actually molest her, I still made sure that he needed to get out of the house with us, that she was going to sleep on that couch alone.
And we'd have a term for it. It's just like, okay, Matthew's getting creepy. Let's go.
This is the guy my friends had such a hard time accepting could do what he did to me. But it's important to remember, I didn't see it coming either. We were all very close, and that affected the way we saw things.
It was just something I felt I had to eat, you know? I just had to feel the hurt and bury it and move on. I moved away again. Years passed. Every visit back to LA, we reunited, celebrated. During one visit, my friends invited a girl I'd never met to brunch. This girl was mean, very mean, but only to me.
Rolling eyes, giving me dirty looks. And it was weird because we were just a bunch of friends at brunch. I didn't understand it.
After the brunch, a friend explained that the girl was Matthew's best friend.
The fact that his anger was still there and could still reach me and hurt me after all these years and all the space that I'd put between us, it was just too much for me to bear. And I was angry. I was really, really, really angry. And it made me question, why am I still protecting him? Why am I still trying to keep the peace? So I decided to
come out again with the truth. And this time I was going to make it as public as I could. I wrote down a very detailed account of the night of the sexual assaults and the stalking and abuse that led up to that night. And I posted it on Facebook. It was terrifying, but freeing too.
And so then immediately you like pressed post and then you were like, I don't know what's going to happen, but something's clearly going to happen.
Right. I thought people would see it and say, oh my goodness, Matthew did this, like, and share it with other people so that he would be outed. But that's not what happened. For the second time, I came out with the truth. But it still didn't work because everyone around me covered it right back up again.
Well, the way I approached it, because I had a Halloween party and I invited him here.
This is Nicole.
I said, hey, did you see that Facebook post that Janie posted? And I didn't want to get into it because I was having a party. And he was like, yeah, I heard about it. Because I was like, I don't know what's going on between you two. But, you know, I'm still your friend at the moment. Like, you know, just know that is what I told him.
Anthony was also part of our tight-knit group from high school, and he saw the Facebook post as well.
I think I only read it once because I don't think I could have imagined reading it again. It was pretty intense. But I feel like I always find, like, the victim and the perpetrator somehow. I remember feeling really bad for you, and then also felt bad for Matt.
What a tortured young man.
This is actually my mom. It turns out she had a similar response as Anthony when she first heard about the assault.
I thought he's dangerous, but he carried that really, really, really damaged child with him. So even in that moment where I was so hurting for what you went through and so angry for how he manipulated people against you and so relieved that you had stood up and said something, I was thinking, God, that poor, ruined baby.
I felt like I had to be a little protective, too.
This is Nicole again.
Like, where I was, you know, this is my friend still. Like, what do I do with this information? Kind of a thing.
So Matthew is your friend still, so yeah. What do you do with that information?
Right.
One day, about 10 years after the assault occurred, I was actually in LA for a visit.
And Nicole brought up Matthew, testing out how I would feel about him being invited to an event where I'd be.
And I was like, Nicole, remember he sexually assaulted me? And she said, yeah, but he didn't really do anything, did he?
I froze. Something clicked. For the first time, I got a glimpse of the thinking behind my friend's reaction to the assault. I wanted to know more, so I got a dinky Sony recorder, and I asked them.
Because when you were talking to me, you're very unsure of the whole situation in the first place.
Here's Nicole again.
Well, I wasn't unsure of what happened. I was not sure that I'd been roofied, because there's no way to prove it.
Yeah.
Confronting the truth with my friends was scary, but I learned things about how the denial worked.
And having to very slowly and patiently work through that with them was not easy.
Like how Nicole focused her memory on the part of the story I couldn't be sure about, whether Matthew had drugged me or not. And she extended that uncertainty to the part of the story I was sure about, the assault itself.
I don't think it's possible that I didn't tell you that he molested me.
I don't remember that part, but yeah, I can definitely see you saying that. And that's probably like the molestation part of it is what is iffy in general, I feel like. So your mind is like, well, what does that really mean? And yeah, I know for a fact you didn't elaborate on what that meant.
I probably didn't. Yeah. I probably didn't.
And I don't blame you.
Want to go hard. Into details about it, but
yeah.
I thought molestation meant something.
Well, it does.
Bad.
For sure. Yeah. I guess the way it was told to me too, I feel like just because you were unsure about a lot of things, I feel like maybe that's why I was like, well, maybe she's not sure of all this stuff that's happening.
More than a few friends did the same thing Nicole did. Make the certain uncertain.
There has to be a mistake.
This is Malia.
Yes, he's weird and he crosses the line, but Matt is not a malicious person. You begin sort of trying to justify the story with the person you think you know.
Did you think I was telling the truth? As far as, like...
I thought you were telling your truth. But I thought that there had to be some cosmic misunderstanding.
So, after that, did it change your friendship with Matthew at all, or...
No.
Here's Nicole again.
You want some justification that it's okay that you're friends with this person.
So how were you dealing with that in your own mind?
Probably the same way I've dealt with situations with myself. It's like, put it back in your brain, try and forget about it. You know, be there for your friend, but like also, like you, not him, but like also, you know, try and separate myself. Like, well, I'm a different person.
No one thought I was lying. And yet, they all found a way to make the whole thing go away.
I never thought I was crazy, but it's either I'm crazy or the whole world is crazy, and sometimes that's a difficult place to be in.
My mother and Matthew's mother were friends. And according to my mom, they talked after my mom learned about the assault.
It wasn't my job to tell her, but I wasn't going to have a conversation.
Why wasn't it?
To tell her that her son assaulted my daughter. I don't know.
Do you still get calls from her?
Not really. She's on my Facebook.
My friends weren't talking about it either. This is Veronica again.
And like, to me, it's just like in an instance like this, like, I don't know, I don't want to discuss it with anybody else because it's not, I wasn't part of it. You know, it's your experience, it's your suffering.
They were not talking about it. And then the question was, why?
What do you think would have happened if you did talk about it with other people in the social group?
I don't know. Like, you know, it's just like, I mean, when it first was said, Malia and him were really good friends. I couldn't have talked to Malia about it. You know?
Why not?
I don't know. I don't know if I felt like she wasn't going to say that was wrong. I don't know. I didn't want to hear what she was going to say if it was going to be in defense of him. You know, and once you put it on Facebook, I didn't want to hear if it was going to be judgment on it. Judgment on you.
Yeah, if there had been judgment on me, could that not have been an opportunity?
To say, to this is what it is?
For me, yeah.
It's not that no one ever stood up for you, Janie. That's not...
How could they stand up for me if they weren't even talking about it?
No, but what I'm saying is just like...
Knowing now why the response was nothing, why nothing changed, is painful. Very painful. But I get it. My mother was right. A big part of the reason I didn't tell anyone right away was because I wanted to protect Matthew. Keep the peace.
Okay, I want to talk about your mom. So she was sexually assaulted when she was younger. And she actually had kind of a similar response to you, right?
Yeah.
Did you tell anyone?
Mm-mm.
No one?
I was ashamed of myself. I was stupid.
If a man who you're
no, what I should have
mom,
done is
mm-hmm. There is nothing you should have done.
We were flirting. He bought me a drink.
What does that matter?
He showed me his apartment where everything was and we were sitting. And then he was saying, American men don't know how to kiss. Let me show you. And I let him. And then I said, really and truly, they're pretty good, and, you know, I think you should go now. And then it just grew from there, and it was rape.
That is exactly
and
what
I
they
still
rape
didn't
is,
scream.
Mom.
I was trying yeah. to scream, and he said, no, no, my neighbor's a lawyer. And you know what? I didn't scream. I was going, stop it! Stop it! So that his neighbors wouldn't hear. I was thinking, how terrible for them to hear and know that I'm here. And yeah, it was pretty bad.
Also, I thought, even if I did tell my friends, I had this feeling they're going to do exactly what I'm doing. They're not going to want to choose. They're going to excuse it.
So your theories were totally right. I'm like, oh, that's so sad, like, and scary, and I'm so sorry. It's so awful.
Thanks. So I think I knew somewhere inside that that would happen.
Yeah.
And I think I also knew that if that happened, I would feel so betrayed and hurt that I couldn't stand it. And I didn't want to lose all my friends. And I felt like if that happened, I would just lose everyone. I didn't know what to do. So I left.
I wish you hadn't left.
But I couldn't take not only losing him, but losing everyone in that way. And, you know, like, just how loving we used to be, all of us together. Like, yeah. How beautiful it was at one point. How beautiful our group of friends were. Like, so loving and so fun. We would spend all our time together. It was, the best thing in the world.
It really was. I think, you know, that has a lot to do with it, too, is, like, it was such a close-knit family, really. And it's like, you know, a situation like this tears everything apart, and it's like, what do you do with that? You don't want it to be torn apart. It's hard. But I'm sorry, it's, you know, like, I don't know. I feel so awful, too, you know? It's like, I don't know where the disconnect happened and why it was like, why it's still this way. It's like, I don't want to be friends with somebody like that who has hurt my friend. It's him. He ruined everything. You didn't ruin anything. He did. But yet somehow he made it flop where it wasn't that way, which is really manipulative and scary, you know?
Yeah, it is.
It was painful to do the interviews you've heard throughout this story.
Facing their denial so directly was not easy.
But I felt like it was finally freeing me from that stuck place. I was facing the past together with my friends. I could be hurt by what they said, forgive them, and move on. But again, I was wrong about what confronting the truth would bring.
It's kind of like you keep, like, throughout this whole story, it's like you pull yourself out of denial and then you keep trying to pull other people out. And at the end, you're like, oh, we're all coming out together. But then that's not.
But that's, yeah, that's right. And then I thought we were all coming out together. But yeah, it didn't happen that way.
After the story came out, people I interviewed, people you heard from in this story, were upset with me. I lost friends.
All along the way, I thought we were on the same page. And then when I found out we weren't, it was crushing.
Confronting the truth has been this never-ending process with pain and loss around every bend. But I learned from it, and in a way, it has remade me.
But I had to also realize that the first 4 years, I had done exactly the same thing.
This is not an easy or flattering story. But it's not that my friends and family are bad people or bad friends.
I wanted it to go away. I did not want to face it. I did not want to hurt him. I had gone through all the same things that they did. So it made me realize that these are things that are inside of us, all of us.
That story was written by Janie Williams and produced by Carla Green. We had technical assistance by Mike Dodge Weisskopf. This was a different version of a story originally heard on the highly recommended podcast called Seen on Radio, part of their series called Men, with thanks to the esteemed producer and educator John Bewin. Janie Williams made an entire podcast series about this experience, which is called This Happened. Meanwhile, you can find all the past episodes of our program at kcrw.com/unfictional. I'm Bob Carlson, the producer of Unfictional. The managing producer of the program is Carla Green. The editor is Nick White. Theme music by Alex Weston, with music help from Joe Augustine and narrative music. The Whistler is Jonathan May. Next time, on the final Unfictional episode of the season, Pete's life has led up to a moment where he knows he will find a chest of gold hidden somewhere in the mountains outside El Paso.
Like I say, nobody believes me about that gold up there. I know what's coming. The money's there. I just got to get to that son of a bitch. Get it, retrieve it, you know, and do what I got to do.
I'm Bob Carlson. Please subscribe to this program wherever you listen to your podcasts, and join me next time for Unfictional from KCRW.